When we originally were asked to participate today, so I told Jay and I told Elliot that I'd like to speak about things, gems that I heard from the Rav, from Rav Soloveitchik on Tisha B'Av. It actually is not quite accurate, but I guess the reason why I wanted to title it that was because, you know, sometimes you feel proud of meeting people and learning from people, and I particularly feel proud, and I would say that learning from the Rav, from Rav Soloveitchik, impacted me more than any other person in my life. So I didn't actually, I heard some of these things from the Rav, but, you know, sometimes over the years you can't remember really what you heard directly and what you read and what you... In 1980, I was the director, I was running a camp in Moodus, Connecticut. This was a camp that had been started by one of the rabbis from Mor Sameach, and he had asked me if I would help him run this camp. So it was Tisha B'Av, there were a number of fellows there who were teaching in the camp from Baltimore, and there's one fellow from the Mir Yeshiva, Shmuel Greenberg. So Shmuel Greenberg was a bit of a character, and he said to me, in the morning of Tisha B'Av, let's go to Boston. It's only like an hour and a half. We'll go and we'll listen to the Rav. So I said to him, who? He said, we'll go, you know, I'll tell you in the car. So we drove, and he told me that, he told me about Rav Soloveitchik, who I had heard of, but I had never learned from, and we went to Boston. So what the Rav used to do in Boston every year was he would be in the Maimonides school. They would daven at 8 o'clock in the morning. They would finish about 9 o'clock, and then he would give a shiur on Tisha B'Av related themes. And then at 10 o'clock or thereabouts, they would start to say the kinos. And he would usually like to finish by 4 or 5 in the afternoon so they could daven mincha and he can go and visit his wife's grave, which he did. That's a long time. So 1980, we drove to Boston and we got there, I don't remember what time it was, probably around 11 or 12. And so in the Maimonides school there, they've renovated it since then, but some people were in the shul. And then you had the whole social, it was the dining hall for the school was all set up with speakers and people lying on the floor and sitting. And he spoke for hours on the kinos. And every word, he didn't go through every word, but he would look at a particular phrase that was quoted in the kinos and he would talk and talk about what was behind that, what was the medrash that was based on, the gemara that was based on, the concept. And so I heard a lot of what I'm going to say now then, but I can't tell you exactly which things I actually heard then and which things later. But much of what I'm going to relate now, I heard at that time. I'm going to go through a number of different things that the Rav spoke about, and much of this is from this book here. This book came out just a couple of weeks ago. The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, Reflection on the Kinos, Tisha B'Av Kinos by Rav Soloveitchik, edited by J.J. Schachter. The Rav, when he would write himself, his writing is very dense. This is not dense. This was his spoken word, and it's very accessible. It's beautifully written. And just page after page is just beautiful things. So much of what I'll talk about is both from what I heard and from this book. One of the themes the Rav spoke about was Nechama, that on Tisha B'Av you have an ironic duality. The Talmud says that Tisha B'Av is called a moed. It's called a holiday. And therefore, since it's called a holiday, you don't say Tachnun on Erev Tisha B'Av. You don't say Tachnun on Tisha B'Av. A moed. How could you call it a holiday? It's a special day, but it shouldn't be a holiday that should exempt you from things that are exempted on a happy day, on a Rosh Chodesh or on a Chol HaMoed. It's odd. So the Talmud quotes the following. It says there's one of the Psalms is called Mizmar Li Asaf. It says here is a song of Asaf. The nations came in and took over your inheritance. So the Talmud says, Mizmar li Asaf, Kina li Asaf. What do you mean, a song? What do you mean? I'll tell you a happy song. The nations came in and took over our temple. That is not a happy song. That's a sad song. It should be not Mizmor Liosaf. It should be Kino Liosaf, an elegy of Asaf, not a happy song. So Talmud comments that the reason why it's called Mizmor is because the building was destroyed and not the Jews. Why should the building suffer? The building didn't do anything. You had the altar. The altar provided the kapara, atonement for the Jewish people. Why should it get destroyed? Didn't do anything wrong. The menorah. Why should it get destroyed? The building shouldn't get destroyed. The Jews, if they're rotten, they should get destroyed. So rather, al etzim v'avonim, when Hashem's anger is poured out on the stones and on the wood, that's a comfort. We're comforted by that. The Talmud says that when Titus came into the temple, so sometimes when we look at tragedies, they don't happen in one moment. You say, when should we commemorate the destruction of the temple? Well, it didn't happen in one moment. It was a process. There was a siege, and then they came into the temple grounds. Then they set the fire in the building, and then it burnt overnight. So it says it burnt. He set the fire at Mincha time in the afternoon of this time, right now. Afternoon of Tisha B'Av, and it burnt through the night and into the tenth of Av. So all night of the, not last night, tonight, all tonight and tomorrow, it was burning. So the Rav commented, so what was going on before then? So he says, it's almost like the Midas Adin. God's judgment, or the aspect of judgment, was saying, who's going to get it? Is it the Jews or the building? If the Jewish people don't honor their commitment to Hashem, so maybe they should be destroyed. So all night, the Midas Adin is arguing for this. And he lost. And so at the moment that the fire was lit, that's a moment of rejoicing. That's a moment of comfort. Because the Jews didn't get it. The Jewish people survive. The building was destroyed. So therefore, the Rav pointed out, you have an unusual thing on Tisha B'Av you don't have on any other day. That the halachas change halfway through the day. In the morning of Tisha B'Av, you have certain things you observe. In the afternoon, you have certain things you observe. One of the things, for example, is Nachem. There's a special paragraph we add in the davening. Nachem, we say, Hashem, provide comfort for the destruction of Jerusalem. The city that's been destroyed and the children have been sent out. Give us comfort for the destruction of Jerusalem. So there's a dispute in the Shulchan Aruch. The Machaber says, the author of the Shulchan Aruch says, you should include that paragraph for the whole day. At night, last night, this morning, this afternoon, every time you daven, that's the theme of the day, is comfort for the destruction of Yerushalayim. The Ramah, Ashkenazim, who we follow, says, no, you don't say it at night, you don't say it in the morning, you only say it at Mincha. Why at Mincha? So he says, because that's when the fire was burnt. That's where the fire was lit in the temple. You don't say it at night, in the morning, only in the afternoon. Now, so the Rav says, I can understand, you have another special prayer that you say on a fast day, which you also only say at Mincha. You don't say in the morning. Which is that? What is it? Anenu. In a fast day, you add in the paragraph, Anenu Hashem, Anenu. Please, Hashem, answer us on this difficult day. So you also only say that at Mincha. So the Rav said, I understand you only say it at Mincha because you say it in the morning and you don't complete your fast. So you said something which was not true. Help us on this fast day. Well, you didn't fast. You didn't make it. So I can see that you don't say it in the morning. You should just reserve it to the afternoon. But what about Nachem? Why should Nachem not be said in the morning? So he says, because the day is really consists of two parts. The morning has the status of what we call in halacha, aninus, meso mutalafanav. When a person loses a relative, so you have two stages in the morning, from the moment of death until the moment of burial, and then from burial and on. From the moment of death until burial is aninus. That's called meso mutalafanav. The dead is lying in front of us. So you're exempt from mitzvahs during that time. That is what the Rav called a hysterical time. You're not allowed to comfort someone during that time. You're not supposed to comfort. Why not? It's not appropriate. That's not the time for comfort. What happens when a person, there's anger, there's disappointment, there's depression. That's a different time. At the burial, that's when you're allowed to comfort the person. That's when Shiva begins, and the mitzvah is to comfort the person at that time. But Shiva, already we say there's a different stage that sets in for a person. That's a time of crying, but it's a time of comfort as well. So he says during the morning time, when the Midas Adin, when God's judgment was arguing, should we destroy the Jewish people? Or should we destroy the temple? So that's like Meso Mutlafanav. We're hanging in the balance. The dead's right in front of us. You can't comfort. There's no comfort at that moment. When the temple was destroyed, that's when you can have comfort. So he says that's the reason why the halachas shift in the afternoon. In the afternoon, we sit on chairs. We say titkabel. In the davening, we put on tefillin at mincha. It's a different time. The morning time is a.m. time, morning without the u. The morning time is a time of susum tefilasi, that our prayers are blocked. They don't get through. That's a different time. It's interesting also. What are the primary additions in the davening on a fast day? You normally have a fast day. So what are the additions? So you have Anenu, the addition of that paragraph. You also have Avinu Malkeinu. You also have Slichus. You have Vidui, Ashamnu, Bagadnu. So on Tisha B'Av, you don't do any of that. None of that's there. You don't do any of those things on Tisha B'Av. Because the morning time, when the Jewish people's fate was in the balance, is not a time for pleading with Hashem. It's like he said, you know, it's closed. The doors are closed. And so we don't engage in those things. The afternoon switches completely. It switches from being a day of mourning, a day of mourning to a fast day. A fast day is different. It's reflective. We think, we plead, we daven. So he says that's the difference. You also have the concept of this nechama, of this comfort, in the kinos. One of the kinos we say right at the beginning, we say, Kitam chokta bekes ofanecha. You have engraved the tam, the pure one, in the throne, your celestial throne. You have engraved the tam. What does this mean? This is based on a Gemara and a Medrash as well. It says that on Hashem's celestial throne, the image of Yaakov. Yaakov is called, what's Yaakov called in the Torah? When it calls Esav is the hunter, and Yaakov is Ish Tam Yoshev Olim. He's the Tam. He's the simple one. So it says, whose image is engraved on the celestial throne? Yaakov's. So Rav says, why not Avram? Why not Avram's image? Why isn't Avram's image there? As he says in his words, Avram was a Sheni Yid. He was a good Jew. He could be on the celestial throne too. Nothing wrong with him. So what's the difference between Yaakov and Avraham in terms of what they symbolize? So Avram's the symbol of the first Jew, but Yaakov is the symbol of the Bnei Yaakov, Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people, the entire Jewish people. What do we want engraved on the throne? The Jewish people's image is engraved on the throne. What is that? What does that mean? What's the future of the celestial throne? It's going to be there forever. That throne is there forever. And what's the status of the Jewish people? They're going to be here forever. The Jewish people are permanent. It's a bond with the Jewish people. So that's what's being portrayed here. This is a verse of comfort in the kinos. Yaakov's image is engraved on the celestial throne, meaning we're here forever. We're not going anywhere. So this is one of the themes that the Rav developed all the time, which is reflected in the kinos, which is the notion of the bris, the covenant, that the Jewish people are a covenantal people. We have a special relationship with Hashem. There's the Medrash says, in the time of Yecheskel, Ezekiel, it says that Tama Schus Avos, says in the time of Yechezkel and Ezekiel, the merit of the Avos was used up. The bank account went empty in the time of Yechezkel. So Rabbeinu Tam asks on that in the Gemara and says, why do we say then at the beginning of the davening, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov? Why do we say, right at the beginning of the davening, the God of Avraham, the God of Yitzchak, if there's no merit left in the tank, nothing left in the tank, so why are we mentioning them at the beginning of the davening? So Rabbeinu Tam says, because you have two concepts, Schus Avos and Bris Avos. The merit of the forefathers and the covenant of the forefathers. Those are two different things. The merit can run dry. So the Rav said, I had a friend who I knew when I was younger. And we both got older, and he married and he had a child. His kid looked just like him. And then we both got a little older, and his kid married, and he had a kid. I could see a little bit of the father in the kid, but I could see very, very little of the grandfather in the kid. And as time goes on, the children look less like the father and the grandfather and the great-grandfather as time goes on. So he says that's the notion of Schus Avos. The Avos, the forefathers, had great merit. It doesn't last forever. You know, we can't say, because they were such great people, Hashem is always going to be good to us, because we can do whatever we want. We can be as rotten as we want. We can just rely on them. That's not true. What we can rely on is the Bris Avos, the covenant. The covenant, that will never be lost. What's the notion of the covenant? The Rav told a story, not Tisha B'Av time, but he told the quotes this also in Yishalach, I think one of the books. He said when he first went, the Rav grew up in Lithuania and went with his father to Warsaw first and then moved to Berlin. She said one time he was in Berlin, and Berlin was a very assimilated community. This was in the late 20s and 30s. So Berlin was very assimilated. So he met a Jew, a rabbi, I think he said, who said to him one day, I think there was a nun, and he said, you know, I feel more affinity with that nun than I do with those Jews, because she's a believer and I'm a believer. She lives her life serving God. I live my life serving God. This Jew who's assimilated, he doesn't know nothing from God. He doesn't care. He doesn't serve God. What do I have in common with him? I feel greater affinity with Sister Marie than I feel with the Jew down the block. So the Rav was upset with that. He said, on some level, I have felt that on occasion, personally, myself too. You know, we go to make hospital visits. You meet chaplains. They're religiously inspired people. It's very nice to speak with them. Very, very often, much more than Cheinu B'nai Yisrael. You know, much more than we Jews. They're people who live religious lives, very passionate religious lives. But they're not part of the Bris. They're not part of the Jewish people. The Jewish people have two covenants. The covenant with the Avos. Avraham was told, journey off to that land and I'll give you this land and you'll be my people. Anyone who's a descendant from Avraham is part of that covenant. The covenant was not made contingent on whether we eat kosher or we don't eat kosher. That was a covenant with the Jewish people, whomever and wherever and whatever they are. There's a second covenant, which is made at Mount Sinai, Har Sinai. It's called the Bris Sinai, which right after the giving of the Torah, Hashem makes this covenant, and they take blood, and they sprinkle it on the people, and that's called the Bris Sinai. That covenant is bound up in the keeping of the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are the language of the Jewish people, and our history is going to be based on that. But Sister Marie is not part of that covenant. She's not part of the Jewish people. The Jew, down the block, however they are, they're part of that covenant. We know that. He says, again, this is not the Rav's words, but I'm sure this is what he meant. You know, we feel that today with the trials and tribulations in the land of Israel. You know, many things in the land of Israel are not the way we'd like it to be. But they're our brothers. We feel that intuitively. We feel their pain. There's no question about that. In fact, the mitzvahs and kosher and Shabbos and whatever, they don't even enter in the equation. Well, that's Achenu B'nai Yisrael. That's part of the covenant with the Avos. Sinai, that's a different covenant. It's not less important, but it's a different covenant. So that's part of the Nechama, part of the comfort. That's what Hashem says. You know what's up there engraved on my Kisei HaKavod? What's up there on the throne? The Jewish people. That's what's there. The entire people of the Jewish people. The Rav quoted the Beis Halevi as an interesting comment. It says that that the land of Israel will lay desolate, and the enemies will come into the land of Israel to be appalled at the desolation of the land of Israel. So he said, this is a comfort too. Because the covenant of the land of Israel is only with the Jewish people. So I don't know, historically I think this is true. When the Jewish people have left, for the past 2,000 years till the Jewish people came back, no one could really make a go of the land of Israel. You know, Europe flourished. It was great. It had great civilizations. It had great civilizations all over the world. But there were attempts. The Crusaders came into the 1100s, came into Jerusalem. Jerusalem never became Rome. Jerusalem never became a great city in the hands of the Crusaders. You had the Muslims. All over the years, you had people trying to settle and make the land of Israel grow. It didn't happen. Didn't happen in anyone else's hands except ours. When the German colony, German colony now is prime real estate in Yerushalayim, but the German colony was called that because the Germans came and wanted to do the same thing too. It's over 150 years ago, came into Jerusalem. They wanted to build up Jerusalem as a German colony. Never happened. The British came in, colonized Australia and New Zealand and all parts of Canada, all different parts of the world, but never made a go in the land of Israel. Nothing really happened until the Jews came back. Now with the Jews, sometimes you only see things by contrast. Now with the Jews in the land of Israel, and whatever, over 5 million people, and high tech, and highways, and buildings, and cell phones, one for one pocket, one for the other pocket. The land of Israel is flourishing in Jewish hands. It didn't flourish in non-Jewish hands. So he says that's also a comfort to the Jewish people. Nations will come into the land of Israel and they'll say, how desolate, Mark Twain, how desolate is this land? Of course it's desolate. It's not in our hands. When it's in our hands, it'll grow. That was another of the concept of the bris was one of the Rav's favorite ideas. Another concept he had was the notion of the challenge that you feel in the kinos. What do you mean by that? Normally you have an approach to tragedy, a Jewish approach to tragedy. The Rav spoke about this in Kol Dori Dofek, his great article on, first of all, the Shoah and then the State of Israel. So what's the Jewish approach to suffering? For individual. The individual is afflicted with a challenge, a medical challenge, whatever the challenge is, or has a loss. So what questions do we ask? So you say, why did this happen? Why did God allow this to happen? So the Rav says, and you got two questions. You have, why did this happen? And what do I do in the face of this? He said, the second question is a kosher one. The first one is not. Why did this happen to me? Oh, you know. You know how the whole world works. And you know that you're righteous. And you understand everything. And so you are challenging God. How could he possibly have done this? He's a righteous God. That's a chutzpah. That's not a question. That's not a legitimate question. We don't ask the question why in the face of tragedy. We assume we don't understand the complexity of the world. So what do? Tzedek adin. We're matzdik es adin. What does that mean? It means there's a halacha that at the conclusion of a funeral, so you do tzedek adin. What's tzedek adin? A whole long list of verses that emphasize God as a righteous judge. He knows what he's doing, and I may not understand it, but he does. And I accept his judgment. That's Tzedek HaDin. On Tisha B'Av, it's shocking. in the kinos, how we throw that out the window. We have some of the kinos, one of them, Ata Amarta, he says, Hashem, you said you were going to be my chosen people. But look what you've done. You've put us into the hands of the Edomim. You said, I'm going to take you out of Egypt and you'll be my people. And look what's happened. These low-life nations have taken over us. That's the question you're not supposed to ask. What do you mean? That's a very challenging thing. In other words, we say, Ata Marta, Lama this. You said this, why is this? That's one of those questions you're not supposed to ask. The Rav says, what's the appropriate question you ask in tragedy? Given that this is what the world has served me, what should I do now? Okay, given that I'm suffering, what should I do about it? How should I act? What should I do? It's not a legitimate question to ask, why is this happening? Because we won't have an answer. That's one reason. But yet on Tisha B'Av, we do that in a very challenging and a brazen way. Very brazen. We say, and some of the other ones also, Echa, we have a whole long list of the kinos for Echa. Yirmiyahu says, how could it possibly be that this beautiful city is sitting with none of her children? What does it mean, how could it be? One way you can understand it is he's bewildered. I the contrast is too much for him, he says. Such a beautiful city, now empty. That could be one way. The other way, what he's saying is, you, Hashem, how could you have done this? I don't get it. This is too much. Too much suffering. So how is it on Tisha B'Av that we do this, whereas normally we don't do it? So the Rav also pointed out the story that the Gemara has. Says Rav Chanina ben Tradyan was killed with a particularly difficult one of the Asura Harugi Malchus. So it says they took him and they burnt him and they put the wool around him soaked in water so that he would suffer. And the fire wouldn't get to him and he would die a very difficult death. So the Sifri and Hazinu says that all of the people who were around stood up at that moment when he was dying and said, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo Ki Kol Derachav Mishpat Elemun Avi Anavel Tzadik Yasharhu. Exactly what we say at a funeral. They all stood up and they say, God is a righteous God. All of his deeds are righteous. He's a trustworthy God. Tzadik V'yashar. He is a judge. He is a true judge. At the moment, then, Rav Chanina ben Tradyan was being killed in this terrible way. So, this is the normal way that we do things. We accept it's Tzedek HaDin. But on Tisha B'Av, you don't do that. Tisha B'Av, that fall falls apart. So why is that? So he said, that's the reason why we say Echa at the beginning of Tisha B'Av at night. Echa is the matir to ask questions. Echa is the thing that gives us permission once a year to ask pretty tough questions. Why is that? Because that's what Yirmiyahu did. We take our cue in many things from Tanakh. Our davening is based on, well, what did Moshe do? What did David do? What did Avram do? We don't make it up ourselves. The Rav was always against making up prayers, making up tefillot. He said, we're not of that. Any prayer that we have, any tefillah is going to be based on some authority. It's got to be based on Tanakh. So he said, that's what normally, we read the Megillahs, on all of we read all five Megillahs. We always read them during the day. We read the Torah during the day too. We never read the Megillahs except once, at night. You read on Shavuos, you read the Megillah during the day. On Pesach, you read the Megillah during the day. You always read it during the day. What's with the night? So he said, Megillus Esther that we read at night is actually not Medina. It's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in the Gemara says you should do that. That's a later thing. So why do we say the Eicha at night? It's a matir. Yirmiyahu says, why, Hashem, did you allow this to happen? If he can say it, we can say it. And once he said it, the floodgates are open. Then we go. The recitation of Eicha at night is the beginning of the kinos and is the matir for the kinos. It allows us to challenge Hashem. The same thing during the daytime. We don't say Eicha again during the daytime. We read another prophecy from Yirmiyahu as the Haftorah during the day. The Haftorahs always end on words of comfort, except this one. This one has no comfort at the end. It's again, it's a challenging of Hashem. Once he does that, we go right into the other... Tisha B'Av is the one day where we challenge Hashem in a very direct way. Another one of the themes that the Rav developed was based on the words in the first kina. Rav Elazar HaKalir says, Sachi umu'us ba'edre chaverai. I am contemptible and disgusted in the flocks of my friends. That's what he says. This is one of the themes of the kinos, one of the themes of Tisha B'Av. One of the implications of the exile is that the Jewish people are contemptible. People look at us as being filthy, we're dirty, we're garbage, we're subhuman, we don't deserve anything. There's physical destruction of the exile. There's loss of life, loss of independence, there's death. But the history of the Jewish people become a history of derision, of contempt, of scorn. And that's what he means. When he says this, he's saying, Sechi umeus be'edrei chavarai. I am disgusting and despicable in the flocks of my friends. So what's the flocks of my friends? What's that referring to? The nations of the world. Where did he get that expression? The flocks of my friends. So that comes directly from Tanakh experts, Shir HaShirim. In Shir HaShirim, in Song of Songs, it says, one of the psukim says, the story is King Solomon and his lover are pursuing each other, and they meet, and then they lose each other. And then at one point he says, don't go and stray al edrei chaverecha. Don't go and stray with the flocks of your friends. What's the image there? The image in Shir HaShirim is loyalty. Whether it's a Shlomo or it's Hashem saying to the Jewish people. Hashem says to the Jewish people, don't stray in other flocks. Don't leave me. Don't go away. That's what Shlomo is saying to the woman. It's very enticing to you because maybe you'll get more love. Maybe you'll get more attention. You'll get more time if you'll go with the other flocks. But don't do it. Stay with me. Even though it's more difficult. So that's what the nation say to the Jewish people too. They say, turn away from Hashem. You know, you want nobility? Come with us. You'll get nobility. It'll be better for you to leave the Jewish people and come to us. I remember we visited New York a couple of years ago. We went to the Jewish Museum on the Upper East Side. So there was a display there that was shocking to me. It was a display of, I think they called it parlor women. It was actually fascinating. Women in the 1700s, 1800s, that if you wanted to be high society, so you invited people to talk about the problems of the world in your parlor. And you make a nice reception, and you'd invite the philosophers and the politicians, and people would come in the evening, and you'd hear some real interesting, it's actually a nice idea, real interesting discussions of the issues of the day. So they had all of these influential Jewish women who were famous for their parlor gatherings, most of whom had converted to Christianity. Now, why the Jewish Museum chose to feature these women who converted to Christianity, I don't know. It was interesting. But the reality was, if you wanted to be a good host, a good hostess, they weren't going to come if you're a Jew. They're only going to come if you're a non-Jew. Convert, and they'll come. So they converted. On a different note, I have a famous golfer won last week's golf tournament. Who won? Corey Pavin. So Corey Pavin is a wonderful Jewish boy. In fact, he competed in the Maccabi years ago and won for the United States. And was the leading golfer, leading money winner on the PGA Tour a number of years ago. And after he topped the money list, he was interviewed by one of the Sports Illustrated, and Sports Illustrated said to him, what do you contribute your success to this year? So he said two things. Number one, I went to a sports psychologist, and number two, I converted to Christianity. And that's what gave me my success. You have another place in the davening in the course of the year where this notion of come and join us features prominently. Where is that? In Akdamas on Shavuos. When we're introducing the Torah reading on Shavuos, there's a long poem in Aramaic. It's very hard Hebrew, very hard language. But that's one of the themes. The themes are the people have come and they said, come join us. If you join us, you'll have nobility, you'll have royalty, you won't have affliction, you'll have a great life if you come and join us. The response in Akdamas is, yeah, maybe now, but in the end of days, you know what's waiting for us? A tremendous life in the end of days. So that's what Rabbi Elazar Kalir is mentioning here as well. That part of the implications of Jewish history, of the exile, was we're a contemptible people. We see it in our own times. Inexplicable that the United Nations should treat Israel the way it does. It's just inexplicable. Except that we're contemptible people. Jews are treated differently. That's all there is to it. There's nothing else to it. The Rav used to describe that he would travel from Boston to New York every week to give the shiur. He lived in Boston and gave the shiur in New York. So he said in the early days he used to take the train. And during the Second World War, he many times was accosted by missionaries who would say to him, look, your people are being massacred. Come and join us. You are a despised people. You've abandoned the covenant. Come and join us. So he says they knew he was Jewish because at that time he didn't have a lot of people with beards. So he had a little beard and he had a hat and, you know, he was immediately recognizable as being Jewish. So he said it used to bother him very much. Jewish people are despised people. Come and join us and everything will be better. He said that in the context of the State of Israel. He said once the State of Israel was founded, he was never accosted by another missionary. Because now we're not a despised people. We're not. The UN, why is the UN taking... You could say that that's the implication of the exile, is that we're going to be excluded from their country clubs. We're not going to be, you know, when a Jew gets an elevated position in politics, you know, it's always the Jew. You know, there's always a little bit of suspicion. They don't feel so comfortable inviting us to their parties. But there's also an element that they believe that we're the chosen people. And that's why we get that treatment. Because it doesn't bother me that the Japanese have their flag be the house of the rising sun. Because the sun rises over Japan first. Okay, they're the chosen people. That doesn't bother me. You want to think that? That's fine. When the Jew says we're the chosen people, that bothers them. And so when we're degraded, it gives them ammunition. As the Rav said, that's one of the few, that's what Elazar Kalir is mentioning here. The degradation of the Jewish people is a result of the exile. Another one of his things he mentioned, I'll just mention a couple of others and we'll wrap up. One of the kinos that he mentioned was that you have a repetition of the word shavas. What's shavas mean? Cease. So he said, but in the Gemara very often they take the word shavas to mean not just cease, but sudden. Suddenly, immediately there was a destruction. So it says Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is the author of Eicha. So what is he saying? He says, how could it be that such a wonderful city is sitting desolate? He was the one that forecast this year after year after year. And he then comes and says, how could it be? What do you mean? Of course, you were the one that said it was going to be this way. So it was sudden. It was a sudden thing. I wasn't expecting. The reality is sometimes much worse than the expectation. And it was sudden. The Medrash says that we read the Haftorah on Parshas Bahara. Yirmiyahu is told, go off to the city of Anatot and buy a field there, write up a deed, put it in a earthenware container and bury it. So he goes and he does it. He goes off to Anatot, he buys the field of the Baruch, his sofer, he writes up the deed. Why is he doing it? Pay full price. Why is he doing it? He says, why should I do this? We're going to get thrown out of Yerushalayim any day now. Why, what do you want me to buy a field for? I'm throwing my money down the drain. So why should I do it? comforts the Jewish people. If you're willing to put your money on the line that will come back, the people will be comforted. So he says, okay, so I'll do it. So he went and he made the deed, put it in the ground, comes back, Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. He missed it. He says, the fire is coming up from the Temple Mount. It happened in a moment. Didn't expect it that moment. That's another of the theme, that the tragedies of Jewish history are unexpected. Sometimes we anticipate, but we don't expect fully. I would say that's part of our feeling in the present confrontation in Israel, too. I don't know if, you know, 4 months ago we thought this was going to happen. I don't know, maybe military people thought it would happen. Maybe they were waiting for the moment it would happen. But such a confrontation, I don't think we expected this. Sudden. Sometimes tragedy is sudden, immediate. As intellectually as prepared as you can be, it catches you unaware. Just want to end off with one last one. In the order of the kinos that we say one of the Arzei Halvanon, which is the 10 Asar Rugei Malchus. We describe the killing of 10 of the great Jewish leaders. And then we talk about the Crusades. And then we have this Akina of the children of Rabbi Shmuel. What's the story of the children of Rabbi Shmuel? So it says that Rabbi Shmuel was the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and his two children were taken captive. And one person bought the boy, his boy, as a slave, and one person bought his girl as a slave. The two slave owners, unbeknownst to each other that they were brother and sister, got together one day and said, one of them said, I have a beautiful young girl as a slave. And the boy, and the other said, I have a beautiful, magnificent young boy as a slave. They said, let's put them together, and we'll have beautiful young little slaves. So they put the two of them in a room alone at night and sat outside the door, happy, rejoicing. So it says they're in the room dark, and the daughter says, daughter of a Kohen, Bas Kohen Gadol, my father's a Kohen Gadol, I'm going to be with this non-Jewish slave boy. And the boy says, me, a Kohen, who has all the restrictions of purity and holiness, I'm going to be with this non-Jewish slave girl. So the dawn broke and the light came out. They realized they were brother and sister. They hugged and then they died. So they died on the spot. So the Rav says, why is that there? You speak about the tragedies of the Roman times. You speak about the Crusades. Then you have this story, and then you have another one about the Crusades. Why is this story in there? What's it doing there? So he said, he quoted the following story. It says that in the Medrash, Bereishis Rabbah, tells the following story. It says, Rabbi Akiva went to the city of Ginzak. I don't know where Ginzak is, maybe in Egypt. And he went to collect funds. Could be for the revolt, whatever. He went to collect funds. So a lot of people were together with the great Rabbi Akiva. And in order to motivate the people to collect funds, he told them the story about the flood. You know, there was a flood. The whole world was flooded. All the people, the entire people in the world died. Just a little remnant was left alive. That's what we're facing. We could be totally eliminated. No one was moved. Then he's told the story of Eov. He said, there was a great man, Job. He was a tall man, nice looking. He had a wonderful wife, wonderful children. He worked hard, very successful, built up his business, built a beautiful home. And then he was stricken. He lost his house and he lost his family. He lost his children. He lost his business. He lost everything. And the people start to cry. So Rav says, what's the meaning of that medrash? It's the individual. Numbers don't mean anything. Individuals, that's the tragedy. That in the stories of the Crusades, and the stories of the Asar HaRugei Malchus, the stories of Rome, and the stories of destruction, were lost in anonymity. It's anonymous. There's no people there. You tell a little story about a boy and a girl. I get choked up when I tell that little story. You tell the story about a little boy and a girl. It's very moving. It's like today, you know, we talk about 6 million. We talk about 6 million, but you get one little story of one child in Warsaw that was killed, you're moved to tears. And that's people, individual people. So he said that that's the point of that story in the course of the Kinos. You always have to remember that Jewish history is not faceless. Jewish history has a face. And we certainly feel that in the present challenges. We have the good fortune of the information age, of getting information so much. And you get these emails of, someone sent me an email last week, of all of the children under the age of 19 who have died in terror attacks. The pictures. Brace your heart. Every single picture. It's not amorphous. It's individuals. So Rav said that's one of the themes of the Kinos on Tisha B'Av, that Jewish history consists of history and sweeps and covenants and challenging Hashem, but ultimately it's the story of a tragedy of individuals and the hope and the nechama, the hope for the future, that the covenant with the Jewish people is engraved on the throne. It'll be there for eternity. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take another 5 minute break and come back. You should come off your watch.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.